This podcast is brought to you by the American Thoracic Society. We help the world breathe.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Out of the Blue podcast. My name is John Fleedham and I'm Professor of Medicine at the University of British Columbia here in Vancouver, Canada. Today I'm joined by Dr. Bijan Teja and Nick Bosch, who are the first and senior authors of the paper Effectiveness of Fludrocortisone plus Hydrocortisone versus Hydrocortisone Alone in Septic Shock, a systematic review and network meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials, which was recently published in the Blue Journal. Dr. Teja is a staff physician in anesthesiology and critical care medicine at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, and Dr. Bosch is assistant professor of medicine in Boston University School of Medicine. So Nick, to start this discussion, why is the use of hydrocortisone in septic shock so controversial?
Thanks so much for having us, John. So hydrocortisone, which is a corticosteroid, has been evaluated in a huge number of studies over the past several decades for treatment of patients with septic shock, with the goal of reducing the shock itself, the shock duration and shock severity, and improving mortality. The problem is that the randomized clinical trials that have evaluated hydrocortisone are all slightly different, both in design and the subsequent interpretation. So some of these studies have included different severity of shock. Some have included different doses and delivery mechanisms, continuous infusions versus boluses of hydrocortisone. And then importantly for us, different co-treatments, whether or not patients were also given another medication, and in our case, fludrocortisone. And because of these different results, the different study designs, results have been different, and even meta-analyses trying to summarize these prior studies have also had discrepant findings. For example, older meta-analyses concluded that hydrocortisone's beneficial in septic shock compared to placebo, and a recent individual patient meta-analysis by Paracio et al. had a different conclusion, concluded that hydrocortisone did not improve 90-day mortality compared to placebo in patients with septic shock. So that's why it's controversial. Different study designs with different conclusions, and we really still haven't been able to nail down an answer about hydrocortisone specifically and more broadly the corticosteroids in septic shock.
So as you mentioned, some of the differences may be related to whether hydrocortisone was used alone or in combination with fludrocortisone. For those of us that don't use these drugs all the time, what are the key differences between these two drugs?
Sure. So hydrocortisone is considered like the corticosteroid. It's broken down into cortisol in your body, which is the main corticosteroid. It has activity at the glucocorticoid receptors, which is a ubiquitous receptor associated with several key functions of the body, immunity, cell proliferation, et cetera. And then fludrocortisone is a mineralocorticoid, meaning it acts on mineralocorticoid receptors. And I think what has been underappreciated but recognized in the critical care literature is hydrocortisone also has mineralocorticoid activity. And this is one of Bijan's favorite topics, and I'm sure he'll get into some of this. But the key difference is one is primarily a glucocorticoid, and the other medication is considered, fludrocortisone is considered a mineralocorticoid.
Great. Okay, well, let's move to the paper. And Bijan, what were the objectives of your study?
Using data from randomized controlled trials of adults with septic shock, we wanted to compare the safety and efficacy of three interventions: hydrocortisone and fludrocortisone in combination, hydrocortisone alone, and placebo or usual care. And we were especially interested in the comparison of hydrocortisone plus fludrocortisone to hydrocortisone alone.
Can you describe your methodology?
Yeah, we used a Bayesian network meta-analysis, which is a relatively new technique in critical care medicine that allows us to compare interventions combining direct comparative evidence, so treatment A versus B, and indirect evidence, so using data from randomized trials comparing treatment A versus C and B versus C to indirectly compare A versus B. And by integrating both direct and indirect evidence from randomized control trials, we aim to obtain more precise treatment effects to better inform clinical decision-making and hopefully contribute to future guidelines.
For those not familiar with things, what is Bayesian network analysis and why did you select it for your analysis?
So network meta-analysis is meta-analysis with three or more interventions being compared for the same disease. And a major benefit is that network meta-analysis can offer more precision and greater statistical power than traditional pairwise meta-analysis because it combines both direct and indirect evidence. And we can also rank interventions from best to worst using this technique. So from a statistical standpoint, network meta-analysis can be done using either frequentist or Bayesian inference. We opted for a Bayesian approach because it's more flexible and it's clinically easier to interpret. You know, under a Bayesian framework, we can combine the available data from our prior convictions on the treatment effects and heterogeneity between studies. And these prior conviction on treatment effects, for example, can be informative or non-informative. So we can also incorporate additional information obtained externally via prior distributions. We can use both approaches, informative and non-informative prior distributions. And when they're concordant, we know that we're more likely heading in the right direction, can be a bit more confident about the results. And this was the case in our network meta-analysis. So we used informative and vague prior distribution on treatment effects, yielding very similar results. The Bayesian framework also allows us to make probabilistic statements about parameters of interest. For example, the probability that the summary odds ratio is less than one. Overall, the results from Bayesian inference are more intuitive for clinicians, you know, since we're used to thinking about probability of things being true, like, you know, what is the probability of having my patient having an MI? You know, the troponin result isn't binary. It's going to update my prior beliefs and give me a sense of whether it's highly likely, moderately likely, or unlikely.
Okay, so what were your primary findings?
Among 17 trials with about 7,600 patients, fludrocortisone plus hydrocortisone was associated with a 15% relative reduction in risk of all-cause mortality at last follow-up compared to placebo, with a 98.3% probability of superiority, moderate certainty of evidence. Hydrocortisone alone was associated with a 3% relative reduction in all-cause mortality, with a 73.1% probability of superiority, low certainty of evidence. The comparison of fludrocortisone plus hydrocortisone versus hydrocortisone alone was primarily based on indirect evidence. You know, only two trials provided direct evidence. But for that comparison, fludrocortisone plus hydrocortisone was associated with a 12% relative reduction in risk of all-cause mortality compared to hydrocortisone alone, with a 94.2% probability of superiority, moderate certainty of evidence. We found that hydrocortisone and fludrocortisone was similar to hydrocortisone alone for shock duration, and safety outcomes were similar, but with low or very low certainty of evidence. And finally, our sensitivity analyses using vague prior distributions for treatment effects and including non-peer-reviewed trials yielded similar results to the primary analysis. And we found that study year, risk of bias, and study location, France versus other, didn't have any statistical association with magnitudes of treatment effects.
Okay, thank you. Nick, the usual question. What are the strengths and limitations of this systematic review and meta-analysis?
Sure, yeah, I think the methodologic strengths that Bijan went over are probably the key part of our study, that our strengths, including the Bayesian design, which allow us to really think of the results in a clinical context based on probabilities. The sensitivity results, right? We always make assumptions in research. And so these sensitivity analyses that make other assumptions, whether that's about prior distributions or incorporating non-peer-reviewed studies into our results, we got the same results. So I think one of the strengths is that our results were robust to all these different analyses. And then lastly, with the primary comparison being a network analysis comparison of two active treatments, hydrocortisone and fludrocortisone versus hydrocortisone alone, I think is a novel way of looking at this question of maybe we focus too much on the hydrocortisone, not the combination with hydrocortisone. Lots of limitations, the primary one being indirect evidence. Confidence in network meta-analyses where you're comparing treatments to each other are often driven by direct comparisons, where an RCT compared one medication regimen to the other medication regimen, not to placebo. And there just weren't that many of those in our meta-analyses. Only two studies met those direct comparison. And so that may decrease the ability for us to make guideline changes based on this meta-analysis alone. And then lastly, our outcome was selected a priori, this all-cause mortality at last follow-up. It's practical because it allows you to combine outcomes from studies that use 60-day mortality, 90-day mortality, 30-day mortality. You can combine those together into one mortality estimate. But because of that, it's a little unclear what that all-cause mortality at last follow-up means clinically, right? It means a lot of different things potentially. So I think those are probably our main strengths and limitations.
So what are the important differences between your meta-analysis and then the recent individual patient data and meta-analysis, which concluded that hydrocortisone alone compared to placebo was not associated with reduced mortality in patients with septic shock?
It's a great question. I think both well-done meta-analyses, and sometimes you come to different conclusions. And so some of those differences are just methodologic. The strengths of the Paraccio et al. Study that you're referring to includes the individual patient-level data. So you have each patient's data, and so you can come to a better way to synthesize those patient data together to come up with effect estimates. However, that also has some drawbacks. Not every study investigator of individual RCTs is willing to give that individual patient data. So the result of that is the studies included in our study and the studies included in their study actually are slightly different. So those are some of the methodologic differences. And then also the underlying primary study question was different. So the study question in the individual patient level meta-analysis is hydrocortisone in any of its forms, in with or without combination with other therapy, better than placebo? And that is an important question, but different than our primary question, which was, is hydrocortisone by itself have different effects than hydrocortisone and fludrocortisone? And so I think those clinical questions that these different meta-analyses seek to answer are inherently different, but many of the conclusions we've drawn are similar in that.
So Bijan, I know it's not part of your study, but it's the next obvious question. What are the potential mechanisms by which the addition of fludrocortisone to hydrocortisone improves mortality in septic shock?
That's an interesting question. Although it hasn't been well studied yet, there are several potential mechanisms. I'll just start by saying that a few days after the two 2018 trials on steroids and septic shock were published in the New England Journal, I hadn't yet read the two studies, and I was about to prescribe hydrocortisone alone to a patient with septic shock, used a regimen in the clinical trial that found a mortality benefit. And that made sense to me. You know, when I prescribe TXA, I do it according to the CRASH II trial. When I prone, I typically do it according to the PROCEVA trial. And so, you know, I started adding fludrocortisone 50 micrograms PO daily for 7 days to hydrocortisone, just like in the APPROACHES trial. But it always felt superfluous because when I looked at the mineralocorticoid equivalency tables from medical school, fludrocortisone seemed to provide very little added mineralocorticoid activity compared to hydrocortisone. You know, according to those tables, 200 milligrams of hydrocortisone per day gives 200 units of mineralocorticoid activity, whereas fludrocortisone at only 50 micrograms daily gives about 6 units. You know, so why would 206 units versus 200 units of mineralocorticoid activity make a difference? You know, but then I asked myself, you know, how did someone come up with mineralocorticoid equivalencies? Like, what experiment do you conduct to determine those equivalencies? And when I looked back and went to the original physiology textbooks, it's actually based on sodium retaining potency of the kidney only, which, by the way, seems to be substantially mediated by receptors other than the mineralocorticoid receptor for hydrocortisone. In fact, when fludrocortisone has so many other effects in the body, and hydrocortisone is cleaved immediately at the mineralocorticoid receptor on many of those tissues. And so, you know, aldosterone and by extension, fludrocortisone has been shown to activate the innate immune system, play a neural anti-apoptotic role, improve lung water reabsorption, which would be relevant to patients with septic shock who develop ARDS, and mediate lung inflammation. And it's not clear whether hydrocortisone has any equivalence for those functions of fludrocortisone. You know, to me, it would be like creating an equivalency for epinephrine and milrinone based on heart rate response. You know, you could say X dose of epinephrine is the same as Y dose of milrinone in the heart rate response experiment, but clinically, they're very different drugs with different effects, and those heart rate equivalencies wouldn't necessarily be clinically helpful in most critical care contexts. And lastly, I would say it was interesting to see that in the secondary analysis of the hydrocortisone for prevention of septic shock study, a HYPRIS, mineralocorticoid synthesis in response to corticotropin was substantially lower in sepsis non-survivors compared to survivors, whereas glucocorticoid synthesis was not statistically significant between outcome groups. So it suggests that reduction in endogenous mineralocorticoid responsiveness rather than glucocorticoid responsiveness may have an important role in mediating septic shock survival. You know, hopefully future research will be able to help determine which of the many effects of fluticasone throughout the body may be contributing to the mortality signal our study and other studies suggested for fluticasone in septic shock.
Okay, my bottom line question, are your results sufficient to make a strong recommendation to only use hydrocortisone and fluticasone in the management of septic shock? Is this ready for prime time or do we need additional studies?
You know, so I'm not a guideline expert, but the most recent guidelines on steroids published this year in sepsis were published before our study and left their recommendation for steroids as with or without fluticasone. You know, I was happy to see fluticasone mentioned in septic shock guidelines for the first time, but I feel based on our study, you know, future guidelines could consider making a weak recommendation with moderate certainty of evidence as our grade assessment found. I think a greater than 99% probability of superiority might warrant a strong recommendation, but the data in our meta-analysis did not reach that threshold. Now, that being said, you know, we calculated a 3.8% absolute risk reduction in mortality with addition of fluticasone in our grade assessment published in detail in the online supplement. And it's interesting that our research group's previous target trial emulation published in JAMIM last year had an almost identical absolute risk reduction of 3.7% with addition of fluticasone to hydrocortisone in a non-overlapping population of patients with septic shock. And so the similarity of findings between the two studies is encouraging, I think, and hopefully future guidelines will take those into consideration. Now, in terms of future trials, I'm a member of the Canadian Critical Care Trials Group. And, you know, while I had initially proposed to evaluate hydrocortisone and fluticasone versus hydrocortisone alone in septic shock, there were a lot of concerns about equipoise and whether it would be feasible to recruit the 5,000 plus patients that would be required to power a study looking for a 3% absolute reduction in mortality. And also the questions that keep coming up are, you know, why not look at fluticasone alone and why not expand the population to other conditions that may benefit from steroids like pneumonia or ARDS on platform trials where large enough numbers of patients could be included. You know, maybe others are looking at hydrocortisone plus fluticasone versus hydrocortisone alone as the next big trial of steroids and septic shock, but I tend to agree with the feedback that it should only be done if it can be adequately powered and that it may make sense to evaluate fluticasone alone as the next step.
Okay, this has been a great discussion. Bijan, starting with you, do you have any final comments you want to make about your paper?
Yes, you know, a resident I was working with who I showed this data to asked me, you know, would a 3% absolute risk reduction in mortality be clinically important? And, you know, it may not sound like much, but if there truly is a 3-4% absolute reduction in risk of death, it could mean 6,000 to 8,000 patients with septic shock saved each year in North America with potentially many more thousands of lives globally. You know, and if our estimates hold true as an attending, it could mean that for every roughly 30 septic shock patients I treat in a given year, one more patient could survive. And, you know, for TXA, the estimated absolute mortality benefit for trauma patients with bleeding or risk of bleeding was only about 1.5%, but we now use it routinely for that indication. So I think based on the available evidence, and also I would just point out that in the individual patient data meta-analysis we were discussing, they did find that hydrocortisone and fluticasone together was ranked as the best therapy and it was associated with a lower 90-day mortality with a relative risk reduction of 0.86. And so, you know, there was some concordance in our studies in that sense as well. And so, as I said, you know, I think it makes sense to administer fluticasone in addition to hydrocortisone and septic shock based on the available data, probably using the same regimen as the 2018 and 2002 ANAN trials, but I know others disagree.
Nick, any final comments?
I'd just like to thank the Blue Journal for this opportunity, thank our funders and thank our team. This definitely would not have been possible without our, especially Bijan, but our expert statisticians and screeners for all these studies. So definitely a team effort. So thank you, everybody.
Thanks so much.
I'd like to thank Dr. Teeger and Bosch very much for this interesting discussion. To the listener, to read the article discussed in this podcast, please visit the podcast homepage at www.atsjournals.org. To listen to more episodes of Out of the Blue, visit our page on iTunes or Google Play. You can also subscribe to stay updated whenever new episodes are available. So thanks again for listening to this podcast.